Thank you, Madam Clerk. Thank you. Okay, before I lose my place here, thank you for entertaining that brief recess. So, Mr. Patterson, are you able to review confidential document 2549?
I can read it, yes.
It's point 11 there is the one that I'd like to discuss that contains a date. Do you believe that date to be accurate?
I can't verify that now.
Okay.
That's within the time frame I stated, though, so.
Okay.
I can't testify to that.
Okay. As part of that adoption proceeding, did you swear to the court that you were not the biological father of Ms. Jane Doe?
I don't have the petition in front of me, and I'm not trying to duck your question, but I'm not the biological father of Jane Doe. Okay.
But that occurred in 2004, and by my recollection, you were practicing attorney in 2003, correct? You were admitted to the bar and began practicing?
I'd hoped to been, yeah.
Okay. Again, going back to the previous pages that we had before, page 4 and 5, Mr. Patterson, can you confirm at the top of page 4, the top right there, that page 4 says, then fill out the genealogy part of the Osage parent only with the 6 exclamation points?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think that they distinguished father from parent for a reason on that report or on that form?
I'm not understanding your question.
So they say previously fill in the mother and father's names and then fill out the genealogy part for the Osage parent only. So this form, I would say, distinguishes between a mother and a father and then a parent.
I don't get, I'm not seeing your distinction, and I'm trying to be cooperative, but.
Understand. And
are you asking? Well, I'll let you continue.
Sure. What I'm saying is, and I believe that indeed an adopted mother and father can be present. You can be the father or the parent, or you can be the father, but a parent is something different. And I believe that that's what this form is alluding to and what it distinguishes in that statement. It says fill in the mother and father's names and then fill out the genealogy for the Osage parent. And we can acknowledge, or I hope we can agree and acknowledge, that a certificate degree of Indian blood is conveyed through a genealogical bloodline. And that has been held by the CDIB, has been held by many since the beginning. That's what a certificate degree of Indian blood stands for. And so do you see the distinction here between a mother and a father and then a parent?
No, I don't know what you're getting at.
So what I'm getting at here is that...
I believe a parent is a mother and a father. Maybe you can be more precise in your question.
Sure. I believe I can try. I believe that an adopted child can indeed have an adopted mother and a father. However, that is different than a parent. Parent requires biological transfer of DNA and other things that I hope we don't have to get into today. One can be a father to an individual without being a parent to that individual. I believe that that's what this CDIB form conveys. And when it says, please fill in the father or mother and father's names, then fill out the genealogy part of the Osage parent only. Do you see that distinction?
No, I'm not willing to go there and offend a bunch of people who've taken children in and parent them.
I certainly don't intend to offend anybody, Mr. Patterson.
I understand that.
But it is a fact there. And what we're getting into is a distinction that the CDIB form conveys here. It clearly lists a spot for the individual to say, is the applicant adopted? Yes. And we'll get there in a second. I believe that box is checked. But then it takes it a step further and says, please list the genealogy part for the Osage parent only, which would convey a degree of Indian blood. And that's a genealogy tree that is present in every CDIB form that I've ever seen. And what we have here, to my knowledge, is that we have an adopted box checked, but then to the right of that, the genealogy of an Osage individual is conveyed. That to a person reading a CDIB form that is submitted and signed, that individual would understand this to say, yes, this individual is adopted, but the Osage parent is contained within this genealogy tree. But indeed, what we've discovered and what we found is that the Osage parent was not an actual parent to the adopted individual. Is that correct?
Not a parent? I believe I was a parent to the adopted daughter, yes.
Okay. Go back and read from our form from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Presented in 2017, specifically related to adoption, and I'm quoting here. Indian blood is calculated from the natural parents even though an adoption has taken place. An adoptive parent is not a lineal ancestor, and blood degrees cannot be derived from an adoptive parent. A CDIB cannot be issued to a non-Indian child adopted by an Indian parent.
So parent is used... adoptive parent, or... I'm not
I'll
sure
read it
what
again.
You're getting at.
Indian blood is calculated from the natural parent, even though an adoption has taken place. An adoptive parent is not a lineal ancestor, and blood degrees cannot be derived from an adoptive parent. A CDIB cannot be issued to a non-Indian child adopted by an Indian parent. Do you see where we can get a problem here, Mr. Patterson? Because
yeah,
what we have.
I'm totally confused. I can see where there can be a problem. Is okay. There a question?
Do you see the problem?
No.
Okay. Mr. Patterson, I see a problem. The CDIB regulation is clear. It says Indian blood is calculated from the natural parent, even though an adoption has taken place. Were you the natural parent of Miss Jane Doe?
No.
An adoptive parent is not a lineal ancestor, and blood degrees cannot be derived from an adoptive parent. Do you see a problem with having submitted a form claiming a degree of Indian blood from an adoptive parent?
I see the form is filled out correctly. It says list the genealogy part for the Osage parent, and I did that.
Okay. You checked the box adopted, and then represented yourself as the Osage parent for descent in the genealogical section. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And you confirm that you filled out page 4 and 5 of the document 2543.
4 and 5?
The document in your hand and the one you're looking at now, yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay. Do you know the result of that application in 2004, Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
What was that result?
I believe a CDIB was issued.
Is it fair to say that had you not signed this application, that CDIB card would not have been issued?
No.
Can you elaborate?
I should have went through. I trusted the process at the membership department to review the application and submitted a CDIB based on the application.
If you trusted the process, did you knowingly submit that information?
I knowingly submitted a correct form.
But you trusted the process.
That's correct.
To know that something would have been wrong.
This is part of an application, yeah. They said to submit this as part of a membership application, so I did it. I filled it out to the best of my knowledge, and I didn't cause a CDIB to be issued. I think think the report says that its CDIB application was filled out correctly, although a CDIB was issued.
Okay. I will go back to my question and say, is it fair to say that had you not signed this application, that a CDIB card would not have been issued? That is, if your signature did not appear and that form had not been signed when it was submitted, would CDIB have issued a card?
They may have issued it either way.
You believe CDIB would have issued a CDIB card without a signature?
I've seen a membership card issued without a signature.
I see that as well. We will definitely get to that.
So I can't attest to that. No, I don't get in the mind of the CDIB application department at that point.
Okay. At the time, Jane Doe was approximately 10 years old. Is it fair to say that had you or someone else not filled out that application for Miss Jane Doe, that a CDIB card would not have been issued?
I don't know if they would have or not. It's not for me to say. I've seen issued on less information. Okay.
Members of the committee, I have no further questions right now on a CDIB card. Do either members of the committee have any questions regarding the CDIB application or any other topic at this time?
Yeah, Chairman, I have a couple.
Congressman Maker.
On the application of the CDIB card, was the tribe noted to be of Osage? It was an Osage application. You know, a CDIB card can be any tribe in the United States. Now, from my own personal experience, my dad was a full-blood Osage. And he brought me up here to be enrolled when I was maybe in 12 or 13 years old. I don't remember, but, and I'm enrolled at Three-fourths Osage Indian. Can you tell me what degree of blood was issued on that card for the Jane Doe degree?
I don't recall. I mean, CDIB may have the information. I don't know what quantum was issued. I know I'm an eighth, so I can only assume a 16th, but I'm not sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Congressman Maker. Congressman Tillman.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Patterson, I'm looking at the affidavit from this morning. And I may be just confused. I don't think I am, but I want to make sure. But if we go to, you had stated earlier about the Citizens Potawatomi that you had not learned until Congressman Potts sent the question to their membership director about your enrollment in that tribe. And at that, you stated that you didn't, that was the first time that you understood that they didn't allow dual enrollment.
That's correct.
Okay. So in the affidavit, if you'll read along with me, starting with, I believe it's 13.13 and 14. Sometime before September 7th, 2004, Clinton Patterson and I discussed enrolling Jane Doe into the Osage Nation or Citizen Potawatomi Nation. During those discussions, Clinton Patterson said, we had to choose to enroll Jane Doe in either the Citizens Potawatomi Nation or the Osage Nation, because she could not be enrolled in both. Why would you make that statement, Swire? Because, well, it seems to me that you understood here back in 2007.
I think she's, I can't testify what she says in her affidavit, Mrs. Patterson, but I believe the application process we discussed was 2004. The citizen Potawatomi Nation didn't alter their constitution, amend their constitution, until 2007 to disallow disenrollment. So I don't know why that conversation would have taken place in 2004.
I don't either. That's why I was asking you.
Yeah.
Was there a specific reason you may have had?
Not to my knowledge, because both nations allowed dual enrollment at the time.
I just wondered why you made the statement that we had to pick one or the other.
I don't recall ever making that statement.
It says that, it's just in her affidavit. And Jane Doe, we know, is not Osage. She's not a member of the Osage. She doesn't have Osage blood, correct?
She does not have Osage blood.
Citizen Potawatomi blood.
Correct.
She does.
Neither one.
Okay. That's all I got.
Thank you, Mr. Tillman. Mr. Patterson, I'd like to shift focus to the issuance, as you stated, of an Osage Nation membership. So kind of shifting gears, do you acknowledge, as confirmed on page 4 of our report, that in 2010 there was a subsequent successful attempt to enroll Jane Doe on the rolls of the Osage Nation?
Yes.
To your knowledge, is Jane Doe currently enrolled as a member of the Osage Nation?
I do not have that knowledge, no, but I know that we initiated, well, I'm trying to figure out a good way to put this. I acknowledge that she was on the roll after I received this information and initiated removal proceedings, and then those were shifted at the request of Congress to an outside counsel. So I do not know the status of that removal case. Okay.
But you do acknowledge that she was on the roll of the Osage Nation?
Correct.
Okay. Do you agree that that was improper?
Yes.
Okay. Shifting focus a little bit more, the 2006 Act. It is in our report to Congress, or to the body, in 25233. Are you aware of the impact of the legislation, ONCA 0605, which became codified in what is now 21 ONC Section 1 through 03B? Specifically, it states, proof of lineal descent must accompany the completed application regarding an Osage Nation membership application. The only accepted forms of proof of lineal descent are certified birth certificates, certified death certificates, certified paternity affidavits, certified adoption records, certified marriage certificates, or Bureau of Indian Affairs issued certificate degree of Indian blood cards.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
So in 2006, Osage law was amended to allow a CDIB card to be used as proof of lineal descendancy in the efforts to obtain an Osage Nation membership, correct?
Correct.
Okay. If you'll turn your attention to Exhibit 10A, of 2553, I believe it's page 25, approximately. The application of Miss Jane Doe to become a member of the Osage Nation. I believe the CDIB card is attached in a previous exhibit, Exhibit 4, which I believe is page 10. To your knowledge, is the Osage Nation currently in possession of a surrendered CDIB card from Miss Jane Doe?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know, though.
I believe we can get to that maybe a little bit later with the questioning of some of our other witnesses, but I believe that that's not the case, that we do not have physical possession of the CDIB card. So its inclusion in Exhibit 4 would suggest to me that it was submitted to the membership department in support of that application for membership in 2010. Would you agree?
Yes.
Uh, turning our attention to page 31 of 2553. Let everybody have a moment to get there. That is the application for membership. Do you see that document, Mr. Patterson? I see you're still flipping. No, you don't. It's Exhibit 10A.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I see it.
Okay. Can you acknowledge that that is an application for Ms. Jane Doe?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Was this application submitted by you?
No.
Okay. Mr. Patterson, if you'll look at Exhibit 13. I don't have a page number on that. Would you acknowledge that this is an application for a replacement membership card for yourself? Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And your signature is present on this form?
Correct.
And this was received in our membership office on March 3rd of 2010. Is that correct?
Yes.
And the address on this form is 3136 M Northwest, Miami, Oklahoma.
That's correct.
Okay. Going back to Exhibit 10A, you do recognize that form, correct, Mr. Patterson?
I recognize it, yes.
It was received only a day before your application for a replacement card on 3-4, correct?
The day after?
Day after, yes, sir. So it was received the day after yours.
Correct.
From the same address?
Yes.
Just humor me a little bit, Mr. Patterson. Do you recognize the similarity in that writing?
Yes.
One you signed, but the other is not.
That's correct.
Did you complete the other form?
Which other form?
Did you complete Exhibit 10A?
I can't verify that now. There's no signature on it.
Okay, but you did complete. Excuse me.
13.
Verifying. You did attest that you completed Exhibit 13.
That's correct.
But you cannot attest that you completed Exhibit 10A, but you do recognize the similarities in the handwriting.
Similar, yes.
And I understand that it is not signed by yourself, but interesting enough, you were the first person to point that out. On December 30th, before the membership had yet to begin our investigation, I had contacted Mr. Standing Bear to determine if there was any validity to claims that many members of Congress had received in our inbox. Patterson, if you'll bear with me, I was going to find that email. I believe it's in our report. Page 16 of document 25233. It appears that I'm reading from the report. Chris Standing Bear then forwarded Ms. Proctor's emails to Mr. Patterson on December 30th. To which Mr. Patterson replied with the following. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate the heads up. If you pull the membership application, you'll see that I checked the adopted box. I did not work for the nation at the time of the application. Also, the membership department later contacted me and told me of the error. Jane Doe was already emancipated at that time, and I told them to remove her from the membership roll, but that I did not have the authority to do so. I can direct one of my contract attorneys to initiate a removal action now if needed. However, there was no fraud on my part submitting the application. Mr. Patterson, you're one of the first people to say that the signature was missing and that there was no fraud.
I don't believe that email says the signature is missing, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Patterson, do you recall the date that Jane Doe was legally emancipated?
Not the exact date now, Mr. Chairman.
You refer to Exhibit 7 in C-2543. Yeah,
I'm there.
You do have Exhibit 7?
Yes, Mr. Okay. Chairman.
Can you locate the date on the second page, so Exhibit 7B?
Yes.
And you would agree that that exhibit is an emancipation order?
This is the petition, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Not the order.
So that was done, we started the process in December of 2010, correct?
That's correct.
So we see in the email, if you pull the membership application, you will see that I checked the adopted box. I did not work for the nation at the time of the application, and also the membership department later contacted me and told me of the error. Jane Doe was already emancipated at the time, and I told them to remove her for the membership roll. The application for Jane Doe's CDIB in June of 2004, the membership application for Jane Doe was received in March of 2010, and the application for your replacement membership card also in March of 2010. They were all indeed submitted before the emancipation began in December of 2010. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. That's in conflict to your email, correct? Because you stated that membership had membership department contacted you. They didn't decline the membership in March of 2010. So you're saying that after the membership received the document in March of 2010, they waited until after December of 2010 to tell you that there was an error?
Yeah, I believe the membership department told me after 2010, yes.
Okay. Mr. Patterson, you said that you don't recall filling that out, but you do point... You say there was no fraud on your part for submitting the application. Why would you say that in your email?
Because in a phone call I received from membership stating that, asking me if the Jane Doe was adopted, I said yes. And the person on the phone said, okay, you've marked adopted, but she's no longer eligible. She will need to send in her card. And I said, okay, I don't have... custody over her, but I'll let her know. I didn't know they were referring to a membership card. I assumed it was a 2004 card. Because that's the one that refers to CDIB.
We can rebuild that timeline over a break, I believe, because I think we need more clarification there. So how did you learn whether she was enrolled or not enrolled in the Osage Nation? In 2004, you're saying they called you to say that she was ineligible for membership, but that a CDIB was granted.
I believe it's some, it had to have been after 2006, probably before 2011, I want to say. I don't recall exactly.
It couldn't have been 2011.
I didn't say 2011, Mr. Chairman.
I believe you said between 2006 and 2011.
2010. I may have misspoke.
Okay. I understand. But they contacted you sometime between 2006 and 2010 to say that the individual was ineligible for membership, but that a CDIB was issued.
I honestly cannot recall the exact date of the phone call.
Okay. Do you believe that they contacted you after the application for membership was submitted in 2010?
I don't recall. I don't recall ever submitting an application in 2010, so I don't have that timeline in my head, no.
Okay. But if any time prior to 2010, your response was that the individual was already emancipated, I don't believe that that would have been accurate because we didn't start the process for emancipation until December of 2010. So they would have had to have contacted you after the application for membership in 2010.
But I could have misspoken my email. I didn't have custody of Jane Doe.
Chair will entertain any questions from other members of the committee. Congressman Tillman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Patterson, if you would, when we first started, I gave a little comment about character. And I want to go back to Exhibit 13 and Exhibit 10A. And Exhibit 13, with your signature on it, you admit to filling this out and signing it. I heard you say that.
Yes.
But then we go to Exhibit 10, and you're denying that you filled this out.
It appears to be my handwriting, but I can't be sure.
Is that you don't remember?
This was
okay.
15 years ago, sir.
Well, really simple. I'm no handwriting analysis. I'm not.
Me neither.
But if you'll look at that, the street address, 3136 MNW, if you look at that W, it's got kind of a whip on the end. Exhibit 13, and it's got the same whip on number 10. And if you look at the P in Patterson on 13, and you look at the P on 10, that's identical. Why is it so hard for you to say, Yeah, I did feel that. That's got to be me.
Because it's not signed, sir. I mean, if I was trying to copy somebody's handwriting, I would try to make it identical.
So now you're saying somebody apparently tried to mimic a document.
No, sir. That's not what I'm saying, Congressman. I'm saying that I can attest to this document because I didn't sign it.
Sure appears to me like you filled it out. That's all I'm saying. Would you agree with that?
It's certain, yes. I can agree with that.
Okay, that's all I have at this time.
Congressman Maker.
Yes, Chairman. I just have a general question, sort of. When you adopt a child, that's forever, right? I mean, even though you divorced a mother, you're still the child is still your adopted daughter now, today.
Yes.
Thank you, that's all.
Mr. Patterson, I'm not an attorney. I'm a little confused on that process. I believe there was an emancipation subsequent to the adoption. Does an emancipation order vacate an adoption order? I don't know the answer to that. I'm deferring, and I will check with legal counsel later, but...
Okay, so the adoption was in late 2003, early 2004, making me her legal parent. The emancipation was in 2010, removing her minority and making her an adult.
Okay. Understand. I got that. Mr. Patterson, shifting gears one more time, I'm going to focus on the Citizen Potawatomi Nation and some of the things surrounding that. And yes, I have my email included in some of our documents, and yes, I did take it upon myself to contact Citizen Potawatomi, but generally speaking, when we are given claims by the public, it's our job as elected officials to do some due diligence there, and I did that. And while I respect your enrollment as a citizen of the Potawatomi Nation, I believe there's a problem there. So you are, and we've kind of already covered this, but you are currently enrolled as a citizen in the Citizen Potawatomi Nation.
Yes.
Okay. And you are aware of the provisions in their constitution stating that you cannot be dual enrolled.
Yes.
That's Article 3, Section 1G, that no member of the Citizen Potawatomi Nation may hold membership in any other tribe.
Yes.
But you believe, and you plan to assert, that you should be grandfathered in.
I'm going to assess the situation to see if that's a valid claim. Yes, I believe it is.
Okay. Did you at any point seek a CDAB card for Miss Jane Doe through the Citizen Potawatomi Nation?
No, not to my knowledge.
Mr. Patterson, just to provide some context, I think that what you've stated is exactly what many on this committee have a problem with here, and that is an attitude or belief that you may be above the law. And I believe that that's inherent or at least contained in a belief that somehow the provisions of the Citizen Potawatomi Constitution don't apply. It's not really a question. I'm just telling you what I feel. And that's contrary to what we see in that press release from Ms. Wells' office as Attorney General. I will admit that I should be a little bit more organized in my paper collections here, but it was pretty clear that we should be doing our best to hold everybody accountable to the law. And that, to me, would say that no member of the Citizen Potawatomi Nation may hold position in another tribe. And your assertion that I should be grandfathered in my opinion, speaks to that attitude that we've got here. And where I want to go with this and where I get back into questions is, Mr. Patterson, did you ever receive an ethics complaint, screenshot, a note from a superior, note from a subordinate, anything that explained to you some of the charges that were being levied on social media regarding what we're discussing today prior to Mr. Standing Bear contacting you on December 30th, I believe it was?
I don't recall exactly. The timing of Mr. Standing Bear's email, but I was contacted by ONPD about the issue. Maybe that morning when I walked in. I don't know if that was before or after the email from Mr. Standing Bear.
Okay. Mr. Patterson, I've spoken with ONPD. I think it was that morning, just so that you're aware. But prior to that, you don't know of any contact of anybody pointing you to claims or allegations that may have been out there?
I can't recall any of that now.
Good. Have you participated as Assistant Attorney General or as the Attorney General in requesting individuals relinquish their membership due to having inconsistencies with adoption records surrounding their membership in the Osage Nation?
Adoption records? Yes.
Have you participated in the prosecution of other individuals for having adopted members that are then placed on the rolls of the Osage Nation?
Yes.
Are you actively prosecuting individuals for having been enrolled in the Osage Nation based on questionable documentation surrounding their eligibility?
Yes.
This, in my opinion, not asking a question, this speaks to exactly what I just spoke about, Mr. Patterson. In that we have our nation's top law enforcement officer, which you are, sir, actively participating in the prosecution of others when we find this information. I see problems there, and I want you to know that.
Okay. What problem do you see? Can I ask you a question?
Sure, absolutely, sir.
And then
I see that you are prosecuting other individuals for having adopted members on the roll, but yet there are adopted members in your family that are on a roll, and there's no prosecution.
There is prosecution. As soon as I learn of it, there is prosecution. I did not know she was on the roll. Last I heard, she was not eligible to be on the roll.
But your email says that as soon as they told you she was not eligible, you then told them to remove her.
Correct.
You didn't think at any point after you assumed office to check that?
No, I expected them to do the removal.
It's a lot of trust that we've got.
I can't do every job up here.
None of us can, sir.
Agreed.
Mr. Patterson, in all this time, I'm just going out on a limb here. We've all received copies of the Osage News. We've received election notices. At any point, did you receive something that had Jane Doe's name on it that might have indicated to you, hey, maybe that membership is still active?
No, not at any point whatsoever. I don't check the roll. I don't have access to the roll.
Do you check your mail?
Yes, I check the mail. Do I check someone else's mail?
Sir, we have in our records and in our affidavit from Ms. Patterson, you residing at the same location as Jane Doe, who would have undoubtedly received notification with that individual's name on it. You never thought to say, hey, why did I get two of these?
In 2004?
At any time.
No.
You're attesting that you never received anything with Jane Doe's name on it.
That's correct.
Okay.
No.
Are there any other questions from the committee? Not at this time. Congressman Tillman.
I do.
Mr. Patterson, back to the affidavit, point number 33, if you'll turn there with me. It says, sometime in 2013, Jane Doe called me and told me the following. Clinton Patterson had called her and told her that Osage Nation membership laws changed. You remember stating that to Jane Doe?
No, sir, I do not.
You don't remember, okay. That the Osage Nation membership department learned Jane Doe was adopted and that Jane Doe was ineligible for Osage Nation membership. And based on that phone call with Jane Doe, I believe she was no longer a member of the Osage Nation. You don't recall having that conversation with Jane Doe is what you're saying to me, correct?
We had the conversation. I do not believe it was 2013.
Okay. I'm just reading off of the affidavit, which is,
sure,
you know, sworn statement. So when you were Assistant Attorney General, what year was that?
Beginning October 2011.
October 2011. And at no time during your tenure as Assistant Attorney General, never in the back of your mind did you say to yourself that you know Jane Doe was still a member of the Osage Nation, that she had a card. You know, that never crossed your mind.
No, sir. I never did. Not once.
Even though that membership has audits. Membership has audits, and they look for that kind of thing, and it never sparked in your mind that, oh, crap, I better go get her off here.
No.
Never did.
No, did not.
And then when you became Attorney General, it still never crossed, even though she was enrolled, it never crossed your mind that, oh, my gosh, I got to go get her. Or did you ever just say, you know, it's too late?
No, sir. I did not know she was on the roll.
You didn't know?
No, I had no knowledge. I don't scour the role to, you know.
No, it's not looking for your adopted daughter.
Or even investigate my legal adversaries. Role is very strict in what it's maintained for.
I understand that.
I mean, there's specific uses allowed by law, and that's not one of them.
But it never occurred to you through all those years, you sitting in that seat up there, that your adopted daughter was a member, had a membership card of the Osage Nation.
No, sir.
No, sir. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Congressman Tillman. And I kind of want to go back. We look at the membership card or membership application for Jane Doe. It was submitted when the individual was a minor. Do you believe that the individual in question filled that form out themselves and submitted it as a minor?
I'm saying I don't know how it got submitted.
It was mailed from the same address that you sent a form roughly the same day, presumably, a day or two before or after.
Yeah, I can agree with that. It's on the...
In substantially the same handwriting.
Yes, I agree.
But you don't know how that one got submitted?
I do not know.
Okay. It's about 11:35 here. At this time, Chair will open up the floor to many members of the committee or any members of the Congress that have any questions. Are there any members of Congress that have any questions for Mr. Patterson? Seeing none, are there any members online? I believe we have Congresswoman Goodfox and Congresswoman Lemon online, I believe.
Chair, this is Alice. I wasn't aware that the members were going to be allowed to ask questions, so I don't have any prepared
at this time.
I was under the assumption that the committee was doing all of this, and
Congresswoman Goodfox, are you trying to?
Mr. Chair,
I don't believe there would be any questions at this time.
Mr. Chair, this is Congresswoman Lemon.
Mr. Patterson, I appreciate you being here with us this morning.
Mr. Chair, excuse me.
I believe we may have some more questions for you this afternoon, sir. So at this time, I don't really necessarily want to release you. I would like for you to be able to come back and ask us or answer any questions that we may have this afternoon. But I do want to let you know that we will work through Secretary Bayrou and Director Standing Bear before we get back to you, if we do.
Would you like me to remain here, or?
What I was going to suggest is that we break for lunch. Kind of stuffy in here. It's close quarters. We've not made arrangements for lunch here. I kind of wanted to give everybody extra time, step away, go grab lunch somewhere. So yes, I would like for you to just report back whenever we decide to come back. But at this time, seeing no further questions,
Mr.
I would
Chair.
Like to, let's say we break until 1 o'clock. That should give everybody time to go get lunch. Come back, Congresswoman Whitehorn. Madam Clerk. Madam Clerk, do we know if individuals are trying to communicate online?
This is Congresswoman Lemon. I'm trying to be acknowledged.
I hear you in the back room, Congresswoman Lemon. I will certainly recognize you. We're having some technical difficulties, so please bear with us.
Certainly. currently. Should I wait until after lunch to ask my question? I don't have a problem with that, Mr. Chair.
Try to fix it during lunch. Come back.
Congresswoman Lemon, absolutely. Congresswoman Lemon, we just heard from the clerk, if you can ask your questions after lunch, I will have IT look into it and have some time set aside for you specifically when we return after 1 o'clock. Thank you. So seeing none others at this time, we will recess until 1 o'clock. Mr. Patterson, thank you again for being here with us, and we'll see everybody back here at 1.